And welcome back to another Babylon podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I am still Tim Callender.
I'm also still Jeremy Heidi.
And I'm still Gary from Jacksonville. Hi, everyone.
Yay, Gary.
Well, thanks when I heard that this was going to be the last feedback of Palooza, there was no way I was going to miss it.
Yes, and we're grateful for that. So are we going to get you commenting on all your comments?
No. Lately, I've been edged out of my voicemail throne, which is fine. Times move on. I replaced Yaristo. Now Neil replaced me. So that's fine. I have no problem with that. I'm glad it's continued to move on as it has and as it must. So I'm grateful. I just had some inner calling to come and join you guys tonight, not even realizing it was the last one. Obviously, fate or a Vorlon intervened.
Yeah, there's a Vorlon in your head, I think.
I don't doubt it.
Well, very good. Hey, before we get started, though, I've got a couple little things to pass on here. The first one comes from the Jason Davis, who sent along a message that B5's conceptual consultant Harlan Ellison has released a signed two-book set over at harlanbooks.com. That's one word, harlanbooks.com. The set consists of none of the above, Ellison's unproduced screenplay adaptation of Norman Spinrad's novel Bug Jack Baron, and Rough Beasts, a collection of 17 never-before-collected short stories from Ellison's pulp career in the 1950s. And then Jason tells me that the set is available for pre-order for $75 at harlanbooks.com, and the book starts shipping November 12th through the 16th. Actually, start shipping the week November 12th. So let me take that back. There you go. So there's a little bit of Harlan Ellison news for you that's tied in the B5. And then I've got another quickie that I went looking just to see what might be going on these days over at Studio JMS. And there's not anything solid that I could find, but I did stumble across this little bit that Andy and Lana Wachowski's next project might be a TV series titled Sense8 with S-E-N-S-E number 8. Little is known about the TV series, but Variety is reporting that the duo has teamed up with J. Michael Straczynski to develop the story, and that JMS is slated to be showrunner. That's all anybody knows about this.
Gosh, I never thought he'd want to run a show again.
If you want to tell a story, you got to go where the eyeballs are, and the eyeballs are on TV these days. So
yeah, and I think at this point in time, he can pick and choose the projects he wants to work on. And I don't know how he might personally feel about the Wachowskis, but maybe he is a fan of their work, or at least thinks that they put together quality product such that he'd want to be involved in a subject that they're working on. So there you go. That's all I can find about that. It's like this, one of those rumor things, that'll get everybody kind of worked up, and maybe something will happen, maybe something won't. Who knows?
And I don't have any news other than I can't believe. What are we going to do with any voicemails that come in after this?
Well,
they'll figure something out.
Yeah, we'll figure something out.
I know. I'll have an empty speed dial placed for the first time in over half a decade. I know. I don't.
Hopefully, we can find a new one for you. Like I said, I have new projects on the horizon. I'm sure Tim has ideas for new projects that may or may not come to fruition later.
Yeah, we'll see. But, one of the things that I've been starting to work on is the bag puppet nonsense that you might have caught over a slice of sci-fi.
Yes, if you haven't seen Tim's various reviews for Doctor Who and other media properties, go to,
and a little bit of space science too.
Yeah, a little bit of science news. Go to sliceofsci-fi.tv. You'll see some of Tim's bagcast videos. They are very amusing and entertaining, and the science ones are insightful.
Yeah. I'm having fun with it, I can tell you that.
That's good. So, any other news, Gary?
No, I'm trying to think on at the moment. Pat Tallman is getting ready to start up her Be a Santa project that she's been doing, gosh, I think for about 10 or 15 years now. She runs it every year, and I think it's beasanta.org. She's running right now, and so hopefully, you know, she, you know, basically gives, you know, collects money for toys for underprivileged children. So definitely a worthwhile cause, and that's just starting up. Hopefully by the time this airs, you still have time to donate and help her. And even if you don't get in and on time, I'm sure she's going to run it again next year, so you'll certainly be able to contribute to that. As far as any other news? The JMS news, I think Tim's been pretty good with covering most of it. I did hear an interesting tidbit that I don't know whether it's true or not, but I had heard that people were talking about Crusade, and at one point, I didn't know this, that Harlan Ellison was supposed to be the script supervisor.
I did not know that.
I did not know that either.
For season two, so figured I'd share that little tidbit with you. It might have really taken an interesting, you know, turn in the storylines had that happened. But that being said, we've commented as well as, you know, I know you've even done a whole show on all the people that have passed. And my favorite JMS quote about it is leave the guest alone already. So that's been a nice thing. And well, since this is the last Feedbackapalooza, let me just take a few minutes now while I still have it together to oh geez.
Crash.
Just to say thank you to you guys. You've meant more than I could really say, but it's been a pleasure.
Oh well, I was gonna say this for the last show, but it's been a pleasure having fans like you, Gary, and people who've been involved enough to make it worth our while to do this for 7 years.
Oh, thanks. No, it means a lot. You guys, you know, you were my gateway drug into podcasting, and I've gone on to not only you know, contribute to this show, to Slice over there, myself and two other fans from the show that this show got us together. We've been now doing our own podcast, Critical Myth, for over 2 years now. And that's been a lot of fun too. I'm involved in the Parsec Awards, which is awards for speculative fiction. And I would have done none of it if it wasn't for you.
Wow.
Well,
I'm glad we could, we found a safe hobby for you.
Yeah, it's keeping people like you off the streets that makes it all worthwhile.
That it does.
You know,
okay.
Talking about longevity, everybody in IRC is measuring the show in fractions of their lifetime, so that's not too bad.
Okay, now you guys are making me feel old.
I've been listening to the show for 1/6 of my life.
That means I've been doing this show for over 1/6. My goodness. Anyway.
Yeah.
It's a good way to spend my time because I got to spend time reminiscing over a TV show that I thought was fabulous. It was literally the pinnacle of sci-fi storytelling on television at the time. I think it's tied now with Battlestar Galactica, maybe first two seasons. But I can have that argument somewhere else. Just digging into the series in such a way that made me have a better appreciation, a better understanding, a deeper connection with the characters and the stories that each of them were going through. That means a lot to me. And the fact that we found so many people to share that interest and that curiosity means a lot to me also.
Oh, I know. When I first discovered Babylon 5, I thought I was like one of the only people to, you know, be aware of it or know about it. And to come into a universe of people that not only knew about it but appreciated it, you know, has been really great.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a really quick break, give Gary a chance to pull himself together so he can deliver his usual snark on the voicemails, and we'll kick this thing off.
They tried to damage his reputation.
Little kosh BDSM outfit. Some whips.
And the leather shower curtain.
They tried to lure him from safety.
Now I can see the chickens are eating my grapes.
They tried to have him assassinated.
My dog and I are being attacked by a duck.
But against the force that has risen, nothing can stand. It's Kosh. For president. This commercial was brought to you by the First Fund's Electoral Fund and the Voting Pebbles Action Committee. Music by Liquid Zen, available from Magnatune.com.
www.babylonpodcast.com.
Important information for those traveling to Babylon 5. Pat Tallman on interpersonal communication.
Walter kept, you know, he kind of never looked me in the eye. And the crew would just start laughing because, you know, Walter would be having these intense conversations with my breath.
The Babylon Podcast. It's not just a show. It's a whole new way of perceiving our universe.
And the last batch of official voicemails begins.
Yes.
And so it begins.
Hello, this is Neil from Bowie, listening to the Tech of Ages podcast. And I really like the touch there. It's about the half hour point after Tim stopped talking, and all that we heard was a nice sound effect of cricket there.
Really? That's all it takes to make you guys happy? For me to insert crickets?
Was that the one we're having audio problems?
No, there was
Laura on, and
yeah, Laura. And yeah, Laura was on. We were, you were talking, and I think all three of us checked out.
Something happened. I don't know. And I stopped, and there's silence. And Laura goes, "I'm sorry, Tim. What were you saying?"
Yeah, because we were. Oh my god! Yeah, but yeah, it was one of those things where unintentionally everybody else checked out while you were talking, because I was checking the website and Twitter and the IRC, and it went silent, and I just instinctively expected someone else to jump in first, and no one did. And then Laura chimed in, was, "Oh wait, were you talking to me?" And that, I just lost it. I just lost it. So yeah, I had to add the crickets to that one. That was
absolutely.
That was a bit of fun there.
Hello, this is Jeff from Bowie, listening to show 274 about the Technomage trilogy. And in contrast to the folk reviewing books, I wasn't as thrilled with the interaction with the show as they were. What happened during Geometry of Shadows in the second book, it just didn't really strike me as completely true. I mean, especially the sacrifice of all those technomages to the agents of the shadows. Just for some reason, it just didn't seem right anyway. And also in the third one, I think there was just too much interaction with Zaha Doom there. But on the other hand, it was a very strong trilogy. All three books were quite interesting, but I just wasn't as enamored as Tim and that's all.
You know, I can understand what Neil's saying. I think something like The destruction of what Neil's referring to is in the second Technomage book, and that's Summoning Light. It's takes place at the same time as Geometry of Shadows, and part of as the Technomages are coming through B5 and then fleeing out into space. What's happening that's not shown in the episode but is detailed in the book is that the Technomages are basically breaking off a group to act as a diversion for their enemies while the main group goes off into hiding. And part of as things, events transpire, the Technomages learn that that transport is going to be destroyed. And Arwen's apprentice, Carvin, knows of this, but she goes on the transport anyways because she reasons, if I don't get on it, then our enemies are going to know we know, and then the jig is up. And Londo is involved in some fashion procuring the transport. And so I understand, I guess the long and short of it is, something like a transport exploding is a significant event enough that you would think it would be portrayed within the series proper. And to that regard, similar to my criticism of Voices, there are things that are happening on the station, lots of bombs going off, and you know, we don't get any mention of that in the show. So I hear what he's saying there. But I do, again, I come back to it, and despite that, I love the fact that in the show, the first thing we see of the Technomages are this great mighty power, and it turns out, according to Cavalis's writing, is that they're just doing their level best to try to keep it together without it all falling apart around them. And I thought that was just a different contrast, and I enjoyed that.
Okay.
Oh, more crickets.
No, it's just that there's not a whole lot more we can say, because it's, unfortunately, there's a difference between the books and the TV series, but some of the books captured the essence of the series better, and we can argue a lot about how well they did or didn't do that.
Yep,
like filling in the background portions that we didn't get to see on the show.
Right.
This is Milford Bowie, listening to show 274 about the Technomage trilogy, and a real good discussion there. And after listening to all that, I really feel like I need to read those books again. And in fact, all of the real core books, trilogies, and the two canon books from the first series. Really should do that sometime. Anyway, that's all.
Well, what are you doing right now, Neil?
He's in the chat room, I believe. But anyway, no, Neil makes a great point. You know, as we've talked about it, and I don't know at this point how many new listeners we have, but all three of the trilogies, I think, as well as some of the novels, do a really good job, not only of filling in certain places, but adding to the whole story in general. And they're well worth the time to hunt down, and even the expense, I would say, for most part. There's to get these books and go ahead and read them. If you like the episodes, you're going to like them. Some people say, if they might be pure Babylon 5 fans and not like Crusade, so they don't want to get the Technomage trilogy. But trust me, it is so ingrained into the actual Babylon 5 series more than you would imagine it is. It really mates itself well to it. And while I have some reservations about the Centauri trilogy, definitely the Psycor trilogy as well is very, very centered in the Babylon 5 series and well worth a read as well.
Yeah, and as I've said before, the Technomage trilogy completely changed my opinion of the Technomages for the better.
Well, I think it really finally gives you a sense of who they were and what made them what they are definitively, and you you never got that. You didn't get that in Babylon 5, certainly, and you really didn't even get that in what was shown to us in Crusade. You really didn't have a sense of that, of what they went through, their social structure, things of that nature. So it really gave you your first look into the Technomages that you first and only look you would ever have. So, yeah, definitely, if you had any questions, it's the place to go.
Hello, this is Nifty Bowie calling in about that show 275, beginning talking about Walter Koenig Ward on the Walk of Fame and the caption on talking about it in one place mentioned that he was in Babylon 4, so, which reminds me that I was just watching today Big Bang Theory episode from April. Yeah, I'm a bit far behind on that. But in that episode, it says, you know, the two times that Sheldon ever begged was once begging Fox not to cancel Serenity and once begging TNT to cancel Babylon 5. Don't know what he has against Babylon 5, but there was another mention there. Oh, that's all.
You know, I've been a long-time listener to this show, and this Neil guy calls in an awful lot. You know, you really should give other people some say and get their voice in and express themselves. He seems to just hog the show up. Does anybody else notice this? But that's what I'm noticing.
We need more callers from Florida, I think.
It never hurts. But no, yeah, it's actually, you know, that's an ongoing fun thing about the whole Sheldon Babylon 5. There's even some Facebook pages that do some interesting mocks and quotes and, you know, will, you know, very poorly overlay, you know, a Babylon 5 character into a scene with him with various quotes demeaning our favorite show. So
right.
I try to avoid them as possible, but some of them are rather humorous. So.
Hello, this is Nephew Boy, listening to show 275 about the Psycor trilogy and the comments there and about in the first book how part of building up the telepath was in order to fight the shadows. And then, of course, you know, the irony on the one hand that the Psycor were aligned with Clark forces who were supporting the shadows. And, of course, you know, one of the great hopes I remember at the end of the first book was, you know, here's Alfred Bester. This child who became Alfred Bester is going to be, you know, one of the great hopes in the fight against the shadows. And then here we were, it didn't look like he was going to be helping for a long time in the series, but, you know, then we had the episode Ship of Tears, where he is instrumental in the alliance against the shadows and finding out just what the role of the telepath is in the war and what they can do and helping. You know, that was a major turning point there. So you know, even though, you know, as in the background of the first book, it seemed that he played one role, he was instrumental in a parallel role. That's all.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a you'd almost say an irony. Yeah, I don't have much more to say about that. Believe it or not.
Hello, this is Neil from Fui, calling in about show 275, the Psycor trilogy, and Edmund was mentioning other books dealing with telepathy, and that just reminded me that at the Nebula Awards this past year, I was talking to Connie Willis, and I believe the book she's currently working on is going to deal with telepathy. So anyway, I'm looking forward to reading that, and you should keep your eyes out for when that comes out. That's all.
Well, thanks for that tip, Neil. Did we get around? I don't recall. Did we talk about the Demolished Man on that show?
I don't think we talked about it in detail about it.
Because that's clearly the inspiration for the Psycor, and obviously the name Alfred Bester, which Greg Keyes, you know, makes a blatant nod toward. And well done in the Psycor trilogy. because this is, you know, I'll take a moment to talk about it because it's a fascinating book. There, the universe of the Demolished Man, it's set in the future, and there are basically telepathic police officers. It's not quite the same sort of jackbooted stormtrooper feel that you get from the Psi-Corps in B5, but clearly, you know, the reason they're able to keep order is because they can read everybody's mind. So there's a entrepreneur, shall we say, or you know, businessman who decides he's going to commit the perfect crime. Now, part of it is business related, but it's also just he wants to see if he can get away with it. And I won't spoil the novel because now it becomes a game of cat and mouse between this character and the Psy cop, if you will. But what's really fascinating about the way Bester portrays the telepaths is when the telepaths are communicating, it's rendered on the page almost like a crossword puzzle.
Yes.
With various words intertwined and going, you know, horizontally, vertically, and in and out. And I think certainly for the time, and even now, I don't know that I've seen anything have it rendered. And that's the only way to describe it is rendered. It becomes a visual representation of it. And for just that alone, find the book and read it. But beyond that, find the book and read it because it's a fabulous, fabulous book. I mean, it doesn't read like it was written in 1956 or thereabouts.
Yes, it is. It is a very good book. And to pimp one of my new projects, we talked about Demolished Man on Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas. So go back and check for that. It was in the early, I'm going to say it was sometime in 2006 that we talked about that. And the cross-conversational way that the telepathic communications were laid out was one of the things we talked about, because it wasn't a crossword puzzle. It literally was a visual print representation of how people's thoughts crisscross. It's just like listening to a conversation at a party. You have one part over here, one part over there, one person saying this, one person saying that. And why wouldn't people's thoughts be transmitted the same way they talk in between and around each other? So,
yeah, right.
When I read that book, I often wondered how many memos had to go back and forth between the typesetter to get that right. Because I know the first draft came through and all the lines were straight. I just know.
Well, and the other part of it is this was done, like I said, it was written in the mid-50s. So it wasn't like he had computer software to put it together to show that. You know, I mean, he sat down, you know, obviously probably did a handwritten manuscript, but you're right, Gary. He sat down, he probably typed it all out, said, here you go. And the galleys came back. It's like, what's this?
Well, we gave a line spacing between them. No. but that's one of the things. That's like, I know there were typesetting arguments when they did this, but it's a very effective way to get a message across. You know, so much of us are limited now to bold or italics, and in some ways a straight line can be a very limiting thing, and they really played with it a lot in that book. So,
yeah.
Well, this is Neil from Bowie, listening to show 276 about the short story, and I just couldn't help but notice that at least in this final version of the show, spent about 20 minutes talking about space time and the curable romantic, which is, I remember there were episodes when you were doing the TV show that spent about 20 minutes on a deep kicking, and we did came here on one short story. Anyway, just wanted to point that out. So.
Because he was asleep. He was not dead. AMS has confirmed it is canon, so neener, neener, neener.
Yeah. Well, maybe he was dead and they found a way to bring him back.
No, it says he was in storage at the beginning. I never had the sense that he was dead and brought back to life the way, say, Ivanova was, but...
Right, right.
We got our happy ending.
Well, that's all a matter of perspective now, isn't it?
Well, from Marcus's point of view, I suppose.
All right.
Hello, this is Jeff from Blue. I just finished listening to show 276 about the short stories. And I just want to mention, great job of editing there, Summer. I thought we had much more material than we could fit in one show, but you managed to get it down to one about the 86-minute chunk. So, well done, and seeing you soon. That's all.
Well, when you cut out, you know, half of Tim's blather, you're left with about 15 minutes of show.
But we need Tim's blather.
Or else we have a 15-minute show.
I don't know. Do you think people look at the show on iTunes and go, 20 minutes here, an hour and 10 minutes there. What am I going to take the time to listen to?
Hi, Tim and Summer. This is Mary from Massachusetts. I'm a first-time caller, although I've listened for years to every show. I just wanted to say, as much as Babylon 5 itself was such a gift to me, your podcast has been just outstanding, and I'm so grateful, and I wanted to say thank you. I've been a little emotional sometimes as I listen to your shows because I know the end is coming soon, and I'm going to miss it so much. I want you to know that today I listened to episode SE9, Absent Friends and Memory Still Bright, the remembrance show for Turhanbe and Michael O'Hare. When John Sheridan and Jakar read the Declaration of Principles, it just moved me so much to hear them reading it, and especially Jakar's voice, oh my goodness. Anyway, I have a signed copy of it over my desk. And I see it every day, and it really hit home with me. I wanted to say thank you. So I hope that the show goes on forever and ever, but if not, you'll be in my memory, Absent Friends, and Memory Still Bright. Thanks. Bye.
Okay, wow. So now I'm going to start crying.
I thought I got it out of you already. Thank you.
I know. No, I told you I'm a softie.
Yeah, I posted the audio for the In Memory of show late last night, and it just felt right to include, instead of like a regular promo or something during the break, it just felt right to put in that scene where Delenn asked John to read the Declaration of Principles. It just felt right, and it didn't dawn on me until after I was listening to the finished product that I'm like, wow, having Andreas's voice in there really, really brought home how many people we've lost from the show. And I was like, oh man, did that? And I'm like, wow, okay. I didn't mean it like that, but I'm glad that it came across as what I intended, just a quiet moment of solemnity instead of a crazy kooky promo in between.
Yeah, right, right. And that was appropriate. If you go out to the website and the post for SE number 9, Jan posts up a link to isnanchordesk.com. Go to our website, you'll find the link there, and it's basically a website that plays tribute to all the cast and crew who have appeared on the show and have passed away.
A guy's name, his name's Mitch. He has called into the show several times over the years as well.
And you know, this, I don't want to say the sad thing, because one's not better than the other, but some of these people are awfully young, you know?
Yeah.
You know, there's no other way to put it. And it's just like, that's sad.
It is.
So anyway, and it's not just the cast, but it's also crew. directors, assistant directors, so forth. So anyways, yeah, highly should be checked out. Just to, anyways, and beyond that, Mary, thank you very much. We're glad to have been a part of your life, and we're happy to, you know, to have been able to do this for as long as we've been able to do it. You know, I mean, it's been a solid run, and I know when we do our final Lights Out show, we'll get more into it. But there you are. The show will be out there. It's the internet. It'll never go away.
Oh, jeez. Oh, God.
And yeah, everything's true. So.
Hey there, Babcasters. Lathe Preston here. I was just listening to the show about the Babylon 5 collectibles. I have a few comments of my own on this subject. First off, Summer, thought it was very interesting that your ships used to guard your desk. My little ship models also guarded the computers at my office. Until we shuffled desks and, well, they haven't come back out of the drawer. I mean, hangar bay. Anyway, on to other subjects. If you keep a look around, you never know where you're going to find them. A few months back, I spotted a couple of the action figures in a local cards and collectibles store. Didn't have the money on hand to buy them then. Need to remember to go back to the store and see if they still got them. And finally, on the subject of the Star Fury model, if I'm remembering right, it is just one model with decals for each one. I recall my brother had that model, and he couldn't decide for sure whether he wanted to go with the Earth Force decal set or the Black Omega. I'm pretty sure he ended up going Earth Force. I'll have to check. Anyway, been enjoying the show. Keep it up. Bye.
Thanks, and can I just say it's cool that you have the conversation with your brother to find out which markings he was going with?
Well, isn't that things siblings argue about? How are you doing yours up? I'm doing mine as the Russian, Ivanova's Russian star. No, you need to do a sidecar. No. Yeah. You argue about how you're finishing off your models there. That's what siblings are for, right?
You know what? The closest siblings to me was female. And then I had a littler brother. Littler? Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. I argued toys all the time with my little brother.
Oh, well, toys are one thing. Arguing toys is one thing. The appropriate markings for your starfighters are, that's a whole other conversation.
No.
Yeah.
I had to wait till I found this show to have those kind of conversations.
I don't see a difference between how you repaint the uniform on your G.I. Joes and whether or not it's appropriate to hit your brother with a Tonka truck.
Fair enough. Hey, I've got three emails here that I want to read. One of these is a good segue into all this. This comes to us from Joe Carflay, who has been a correspondent to the show over the years. And he writes, here's a good story that crosses over to both the toy line and the B5 CCG. As mentioned on the podcast, there was supposed to be a masterpiece collection for the Babylon 5 collectible card game. It had a $125 price tag. One of the reasons is that it was price comparable to the Star Trek CCG that did or was doing the same thing with something called the Feijo collection. The other reason is it was supposed to come with a limited edition shadow figure. The set kept getting delayed and no one knew why. The reason we found out a few months before the release is the factory making the shadow figure exploded. The company couldn't make the figure, and the makers of the Babylon 5 CCG had to redo pricing and do refunds. Thus, it was delayed even more, and it was on the printers when word came down that WB didn't want to do the CCG anymore at all. That is also the reason the shadow figure that I saw at the that you saw at the convention was $150. Starting prices on those go for $100 on eBay. As for the Masterpiece Collection, I know a guy who was going to pay it, and he gave me his entire collection, which included printed out copies of the Masterpiece Collection on regular paper. I think the ones at the printer were destroyed, but if one or two sheets survived, they could fetch hundreds of dollars.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Holy crap.
Okay, let's see. We can't we've blown up Babylon's 1, 2, and 3. We got foiled blowing up Babylon 4. Ah, let's just destroy the toy factory.
It's like, why can't we fulfill this order? Factory blew up. Oh, okay then. Wow, that's yeah. I could see that where that would put a great big crimp into your ability to produce product for sale to geeks. Yeah, just to do the paint.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
actually do have something that crosses over into the toy line. I went searching for newer pictures of the single pack Micro Machine ships, the one for the station and the one for the Minbari cruiser, because several people didn't realize that that's what I was talking about. They thought I was talking about the little ships that came with the small figures. I'm like, no, those aren't Micro Machines. What I'm talking about are real Micro Machines. So I had to go out and dig for newer pictures of them, and I linked to them in the comments on the collectible show. Because Lance was not the only one who thought I was like, oh, no, Micro Machines only came in the three packs. No, there was two other ones. And
Summer,
I couldn't.
It took me almost a year to find that one.
Yeah,
when
I've
you
never
first
seen
met, when she had first mentioned it or someone had first mentioned it, I started looking, and it took me almost a year to get my hands on the larger station one, because I was like, no, if Summer says it exists, then it's real.
It does. I haven't seen them. I have not seen them on eBay that often.
No.
And when they do, they're $40, sometimes more. What I would like to do is eventually get one of each for myself, because I don't, those are two what should have been almost readily available toys that I never got around to getting, because I didn't find out about them until what, 5 years ago maybe?
Yeah.
And then Brad looks out and finds that one, the station one that was signed by JMS.
Yes.
I'm like, dude, are you kidding me? Some random toy store in Podunk, Appalachia has a single pack station signed by Straczynski. Are you kidding me?
Well, you know,
actually,
what? That's the only place
actually,
you're going to find them.
Exactly.
Yeah. All I can figure out is there was some convention in the Cincinnati or Louisville area, and he signed a bunch of them, and they just ended up at that store because they didn't sell at the con. Nothing else makes sense. How, because that's, I don't know. How else does a single pack, a one toy, still in the original packaging with JMS's signature, end up in a toy store in the Louisville, Cincinnati area? How does that happen?
And how it's does like, it's like
Brad,
green.
And Brad gets lucky enough to find it and taunt us with the picture of it.
So
I don't know, maybe I'll get enough projects one year to get it for myself for my birthday or for Christmas. We shall see.
All right, next email. This comes to us from Gray17. I guess he's no longer missing. This is about the B5 stamps, and this, it's signed, actually, S. Bandari. I hope I pronounced that right. And I don't even know if that's male or female, so my apologies. But the writer writes, it looks like the B5 stamps are still available on eBay, but they don't seem to be officially sanctioned for postal use by the Postal Service of Kyrgyzstan. Still a fun collectible, though. Love the podcast. I watched B5 in its original run and have been a huge fan ever since. I wish I had learned about the podcast several years back rather than in the last year, as it looks like you are winding down the run. Well, Gray17, you can go back and listen to all the old podcasts. They're all available up there. back in the days when I was trying to Skype in on a 14.4 modem.
Oh, geez, I remember that.
Right, right. And the landline was only marginally better. So, yes, if you really want to torture yourself, feel free. And I did a little research just on the stamps thing because I was curious about that. And there is a whole host of quote-unquote collectible stamps, not only Babylon 5, but Star Trek and Elvis and a whole host of pop culture things that somebody has produced saying that they're stamps from Kyrgyzstan. And the Kyrgyzstani post service says, no, you can't use these things. And somebody still keeps making them. So
they're sort of bootleg.
No, counterfeit would be a better – no, not really counterfeit because they're not copies of the real thing. Bogus. I mean, that's that's the best description. They're just
– replicas?
No, they're not even replicas. They're just bogus.
They're homages to stamps.
There you
go, so they're stamps. They are printed in stamp format.
They're a way to get your hard-earned dollars out of your – fists.
But here's the thing. Most of the people buying them are not in Kyrgyzstan. So where would they actually use the stamps if they bought them intending to use them? Because I honestly never intended to use those as stamps. Are you kidding me? Really?
I think it's you're looking at two different worlds. You're looking at science fiction fandom, specifically Babylon 5 fandom, versus philately. And if you're philatelist, they're absolutely worthless.
They are.
They're not.
Tim, this is a family show. Please watch it.
So I gotta keep
forgetting if they were real.
Explicit tag.
If they were real, then you would have one with a stamp because you sent it through the system, right? Because you buy an extra one to have
Know. Well, here's something else. Maybe the Kyrgyzstan government is just annoyed that someone is making these and not giving them a cut.
Maybe there are not adequate laws against stamp production.
IP laws are strange over there, right?
Well, I don't think they're being made in Kyrgyzstan because the text on them is in English, not Russian. Did you see the picture? Did you see the picture?
Yes, you're right. I didn't even think about that, but you're
that
right.
That is English. All right, I've seen stamps from other countries where the writing on the stamp is that country's primary language. Those are in English, man. And I don't think they speak English as a national language in Kyrgyzstan.
Probably not.
Yeah.
All right, I got one last email here for us. This comes to us from Steve Carrison. Says, hi, peeps. I'm on this year's rewatch of B5, and now that I'm into season 5, I've realized that a measurable percentage of screen time is dedicated to Delenn sustaining reaction poses, usually prior to a fade or cut. Perhaps somebody, Gary, could go through and examine this to determine exactly how much time Delenn spends reacting, then go on to catalog the gamut of emotions expressed in such moments along with degree of pan or zoom applied.
Well, I always figured it was compensation. You know, Delenn or Mira always had to give these long, drawn-out dialogues, and I figured it was JMS's way of paying her back. Okay, just stand there and emote. You don't have to say anything. It was, to balance off the line work.
Sure, right. So Steve goes on to write, sure, other characters experience the similar moments, but subjectively, I'd say Delenn gets the lion's share. I hope I haven't just ruined the viewing experience for everyone. If I have, add it to the drinking game.
I thought we talked about this one before.
I don't. Doesn't ring a bell to me, but
either way, it sounds it literally because when I first said that, it reminded me of the drinking game where you for CSI Miami, where you count the number of times Horatio Caine pulls off his sunglasses or puts them on or you drink every time he has the last word that in a scene that he's in, which is all the time. So I kid you not, if you tried to get through the first season of CSI Miami and you took a drink every time he had to have the last word in a scene, even when it was unnecessary that he say that, you would be unconscious by the end of the episode. And you'd have liver damage by mid-season. Easy. It's actually it's frightfully entertaining. It's frightfully entertaining. CSI Miami was a tour de force in meta television. No, there's so much meta going on in CSI Miami. You could have whole discussions about what the people are doing and not care about the crime they're trying to solve.
That's
oh
funny.
My goodness. Yeah, it's hilarious.
Hey, what if we did an MST 3000 type of thing where we would show clips of stuff, and then you would have a translator for the deaf. You'd have Dylan over there having reactions to what's happening on the scene.
I like that idea too.
All right, you realize that people are now going to email in asking us to go through all 5 seasons of the show and MST3K them.
You know what? We might have to do that as a special thing every so often. We'll have to talk about that one.
Could we start with TKO?
That's fine
with
me.
Start with a bang, yeah.
Well, I figure we go with an easy one. If you can't ridicule that one.
Now, I should point out to people that the people who may not have been around since the first episode of the podcast, or who were not involved in the initial planning of the podcast, one of the things we actually talked about was doing commentary tracks that people could play while they watched the episode. So we'd actually talk about certain things that were going on in the episode, timed to the episode while you're watching it on the DVD. And then we realized that some of the stuff we have to talk to would go so deep that we would miss like 10 minutes of show.
That's even without Tim. I know.
Yeah, that's that's before Tim goes on his in-depth discussion.
Please,
so
please press pause on your DVD player now.
Yeah, so I honestly don't know how we would have done an episodic commentary track without having someone holding the remote control for a pain giver for Tim.
Tim, your agonizer, please. Although I'd be up for an MST3K sort of thing. Yeah. Okay. Oh gosh. Well. Yeah. You know. That might.
Well, it's not that hard. We all have the. You know. All everybody's got the DVDs. You just queue it up at the same time and start going.
Right.
Yeah. If we were going to do that, we should take some feedback from the viewers and have them give us a top 5 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. So we have a special project. We don't have to do it immediately. Mm-hmm. Curse you, fan people.
Really, really. Okay, here's the deal. Come up with one episode per season for us to give the Misty treatment to. We'll see what we can do. Yep.
Don't forget Crusade.
Okay, fine. You can do Crusade and the movies, too. How about that?
Yes. There you go. And if you send it in via recommend highly sending in via email and put, like, MST in the title or something, so we kind of know what that is. So, all right. Well, that's it.
Aw, the last official feedback of Palooza. Wow.
Those Yahoos will keep sending stuff in, though.
And that's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing.
It's been my home for so long.
Right.
<It's
not bad>. And we're finally kicking you out. Oy vey.
Yep. I will tell.
I can't believe you kept letting me in.
I will tell people that I will be making some changes to the website so that it makes it easier for people to get all the episodes. My plan is to, when I post this final feedback of Palooza, to increase the feed length so that it contains all shows back to show 0 and get rid of the season feeds. That way people in iTunes will be able to find them, excuse me, and people can subscribe to one big feed and poof, get the whole darn thing. The other thing is I'm going to start working more on filling out the missing information for Lurker's Guide, especially the newer information that isn't on the original Lurker's Guide. So lurkersguide.org and lurkersguide.net will start to show life again, shall we say? And anyone who wants to help with that is welcome. It dawned on me that remember the Sevalon 5 cartoons?
Yep.
Yes.
The guy had a server crash. So really? We don't have those cartoons anymore because I was getting them from a random feed from his website because that's the only way he would give them to me.
Oh.
Well, they're gone now. All of his cartoons are gone. He says that he's moving them to servers, but it's been over a month now. So I don't know that those are ever coming back. So if anyone knows how to get in touch with him because the email addresses for him keep bouncing back because his server's down. Feel free to reach out and say, hey, if you want a site to host the Sevalon 5 cartoons, we got one for you. That offer is...
He has the best Vorlonism I have ever read, even out of the show.
Which one?
The path lies unguarded. Opposing rows must clash to unite.
What does that mean? Well, your fly's open.
Your fly's open. Yes. Yes. That was the most perfect Vorlonism ever.
Oh, that one. That was a funny one. That was a really good one. And the dig on the Deep Space franchise one was kind of good. Yeah. But yeah, the path is open. Opposing Rose.
It's clash to you, baby. What?
That was a very good one. But yeah, I'll be posting some more stuff over the next couple of weeks while we sweep up and prepare to turn out the studio lights, so to speak, but not the lights on the website. The website will stay. The shows will stay. The feed will stay.
Yep.
And oh, like I said,
I know we'll be getting calls. We'll figure out what to do with all that.
Yeah, we'll be getting calls. And we may do like a 20th anniversary special next year. I mean, how can we not, right?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
So this is farewell, not goodbye.
Yes. Something like that.
Sniff.
I already cried. Mary got me going, so.
All right. All right. As always, the website is babylonpodcast.com. The email address, babylonpodcast@gmail.com. For the time being, the phone number will still work.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to remove it from your speed dial just yet, Gary. So you can still use
hard,
that.
It's hard-coded in there, but
it's probably burned into the screen, right?
Yes, that number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year the last feedback of Palooza came upon us all.
And we will see you next time on the other side of the gate.